Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for hanging in there over the break and listening to our awesome sponsors. We certainly appreciate that. And, of course, as always, we'd like to have you check us out where, Ava?
TheValleyOutdoors.com.
And where else, Donald?
On the Facebook.
Yeah. Facebook's a good place to go, too. Yep. Lots of good stuff. Coming into the new year, actually. I think, isn't the next broadcast we have going to be new year? I think.
It will be.
Yeah. Wow.
It will be next year.
It will be.
The next time we broadcast.
It'll be a new year.
Yes.
This is going on 12, isn't it, or 13?
I think it's 12 years.
That's a run.
Yep.
I have no complaints about that. Thank you guys out there for keeping us on the air. We certainly appreciate that. Any comments about what you'd like to hear in the future, feel free to send it to us at info@thevalleyoutdoors.com, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, right. Gentle criticism. We'll take some gentle criticism.
Well, yeah. No.
We'll take any.
If it's harsh, I ignore it. If it's gentle, I believe it.
There you go.
I don't know. I have no idea. We'll just go with that. Highlighted a story, top of the show, Don. We were talking about the Michigan Firearms deer harvest as we are broadcasting as well in Michigan. And make sure we get those guys covered. But hunters registered this last season, 129,000 whitetail were registered. And they're a mandatory registration, which is nice. It really gives an indication of what's going on for the mandatory registration. Some of the states don't have the mandatory. You tag it. That's all you need to do. You don't need to necessarily register the deer. 16-day firearms deer season. It's down about, the harvest is down about 2.8% from last season. And 81,000 bucks and 48,000 antlerless or does. Hunters registered 38,000 on the opening day. That's a good opening day.
Yes.
Get that put to bed. All regions saw fewer deer taken on the opening day of the season compared to last year. One of the deer management specialists said the season started with generally mild conditions with some rain and wind, with heavier winds in portions of the lower peninsula that likely reduced deer population. Again, this is in the state of Michigan. Overall decline began on opening day when the harvest dipped 4.7% in the UP and 11% in the lower peninsula. And
did they share with you how many hunters registered or not registered but bought licenses?
No,
is that up or down?
They're going to have those numbers. I looked for them, but I did not see them.
Okay, but I mean, if the number of hunters was a little less, that would explain a little bit of the decline.
Yeah, one of the things that always comes into play, Don, and I think you and I have talked about it a little bit, but weather has a really significant impact. It looks like it did have an impact on it. With rain and heavy wind, that will obviously drive deer to not move. And obviously hunters not to necessarily move from their cabin to the deer stand is sometimes much just hang out with the folks, the guys out there and have some good food and hang out and tell stories. And you know what? That's part of what deer hunting is.
Yep.
You know, I mean, hunting in general, it's part of it. But deer hunting, it's part of deer camp. You're going for a weekend or a week. And it really is part of tradition.
It's kind of like fish camp.
Same concept.
You know, if it's blowing and you got a lot of ways to look at.
I generally go anyway. That's not that smart, but that's how that goes. But yeah.
You're one of those, though.
Yeah. You do have them. They're out there. That happens. But nonetheless, it will affect the population. And I think when you look at the overall scenario, as I was looking through, and this is one of the things that kind of bleeds into the next story. I was looking at Montana, and Montana has a problem as well. This came out of Meateater.com. And one of the commentaries that came out was they were talking about cutting tags. In other words, cutting the tag availability in Montana. And how do you regulate that? You talked about that in Wisconsin. The deer population, the deer herd is in, you know, it's in trouble. Where is it coming from? Why is this happening? And then you have various groups that talk about, well, it's this, it's this, it's this. And the unfortunate concept is that, well, there's a lot of factors that come into it. So let's get into the Montana side of it, but it reflects back to Michigan, Minnesota, Wisconsin, anywhere there's, if you're hunting deer, Arizona, same thing that happens to come up in this story regarding populations of deer, and it's a matter of how it's managed and what does impact. Now, you and I talked about one of the changes that had happened in, I think it was northern Minnesota. They had a dramatic drop in population, and they cut back the tags, and the deer rebounded way faster than the DNR ever thought it was possible. And that's our Department of Natural Resources. Some people have game, fish, and parks. But it rebounded way better than they thought it could possibly ever rebound. So Mother Nature can do some pretty amazing things. So that's where you have to kind of look at it across the board. Science is one thing, but you have to believe that if you do some of the right things, it will take care of itself, right? So comes to the story. Western states have a mule deer problem. It's whether it's Montana, Wyoming, that whole area. Deer populations are down across the board, and they're trying to figure out how do you stop the decline. The story comes up to they had a commission in Montana that made a decision to reduce the non-resident tags by about 2,500 for the next 2 years. The goal is reducing both the overall hunter numbers and crowding from out-of-state hunters. Totally get it. Don, it's like you look at pheasant numbers, the population of the state of South Dakota, it what quadruples, quintuples because of the amount of people that come out and pheasant hunt. Those are all non-resident. So you have to balance it between what's the economic benefit, but what's also the natural resource detriment of having that come out. So when you look at that side of it, they look at it and say, okay, the commission also reduced the number of deer tags resident hunters can get from 8 to 3. Now getting 8 deer?
They were able to get 8 deer before?
8.
Well, maybe that's overkill.
Literally. But again, you have to look at it and say, and they're asking, are the cuts going to be enough? Well, I asked the listening audience, if you're having 8 deer that you can take, and a lot of them out there, a lot of the people, it's not the subsistence per se, but that's part of what they have as a food source.
Sure.
Not that it's they have to have it.
They're not wasting it.
No.
No.
But they're not wasting it by any means. So it's kind of a question mark that comes. Okay. Now, the hunter side of it, the jury is split. They spoke with several hunters in the state. They made an effort to reduce the influence policy or have their voices heard. They want to have something. They want to be able to voice their opinion, what it comes down to, right? Leading up to the registration of this regulation meeting, the Montana Wildlife and Parks solicited input from the Mule Deer Citizen Advisory Council. They had 14 hunters from across the state. Everyone was on the same page that something needed to be done. Some people thought limiting buck tags would improve the population in a more healthy and larger deer. And then the other side of the room was like, that's not true. Interesting. The pressure we get here is with unregulated 5-week-long rifle season, which encompasses the rut. The hunting pressure totally is destroying the mule deer population in western Montana. So you've got a bunch of different people thinking different things. I used to be, one of the gentlemen says, he used to be among the crowd that thought we should have more special permits, so we should not be hunting mule deer bucks in the rut because the hammer, we hammer them, and then there's no more mature bucks. But since changed his mind because he hunted and filmed some of the most amazing mule deer hunts that you can go on, hunts that take a lifetime to draw, and some of them have been absolutely awful. So you can have the best place to go, and it can be horrible. And one of those hunts, as I said, was in Arizona, a kebab deer. And he said they didn't see a buck over 3 years old. But after you go to Montana, you said the incredible hunting over there. It was unbelievable. So the question comes in. Now this rolls into the other thing of Minnesota. This is one point I want to make about the fishing aspect. It relates to everything. How do you manage, this happens to be in Montana, Region 7, the same as you manage Region 2 or Region 4. They're different territory. Lakes are completely different in how they can handle. And right now, they're going to put 4 fish in place. But I do think it needs to be managed. As I told last year at the governor's opener, the DNR commissioner, Strawman, I said, so you guys are looking at going from 6 to 4. Yeah. He said, she said, what do you think about that? I said, well, that's great, but you need to manage the fishery based on what that lake is able to handle. They may not be able to handle 4. Other lakes can handle 6. We reduce the population or reduce that opportunity for that. We're already one of the only states that has one rod. We've talked about it before. Add another rod at a cost. You're going to be raising a ton of money. People will pay extra money for another one to be able to fish 2 rods. That's the key thing. And that's one of those things. How do you manage all this and have it hold together, right?
Yeah, well, in at least in Minnesota, just one limit that, like you say, is effective to all lakes isn't really practical. I know because I fish a lot more Canada. Every lake has its own limits. Some are 2, some are 4, some are 6.
Yeah.
And it all depends upon where you're at and the health of the fishery.
Well, and the same thing holds true with the size limits themselves.
And also up in Canada, there's a lot of lakes where it's catch and release only.
Absolutely.
You know?
It's
catch all you want.
So it feeds back into, it was pulled back into the Montana story. So one thing that all of these hunters, they agreed on is the fact that there needs to be more limits on doe hunting. Why? You can have reduced bucks, but you need to have 10 to 40 bucks per 100 does. You need more does to have reproduction.
Sure.
And when it comes in from, according to a 2018 study, that buck ratio is a key piece to success of that particular group or area. And it goes on and on. And, you know, the whole thing comes down to, question remains, will be enough changes to the harvest soon enough to stop the constant mule deer decline? And that's one of the biggest questions that comes into play. It could take years, but that's one of those questions that I think needs to be watched carefully, because in Minnesota, that's one of those things that we saw was pretty darn incredible, because they had some major comebacks and they came back really quickly. And I was solidly amazed. So pretty neat stuff there. Let's jump into the story that we talked a little bit again at the top of the show and last week. Don, wrap up the last part of the conversation. When you look at conservation, I think it really has to be done on a system-by-system basis, a region-by-region basis, and I think you have to see what the history has done and what that can do. If we don't look at history, we are failed to be successful. Because somebody can come up with some new thing, but you have to compare it. Is it something similar that's been done that hasn't worked? If it's similar to what has been done and hasn't worked, how about we do something that has worked and look other than just your region? I think that's an important piece.
Right. I know in Wyoming, every area has certain quotas, certain number of hunters are allowed in that. And once you fill that quota, it's done. Now it's whether you're able to harvest or not is to be determined.
As always.
So,
and the bear population out there is not shrinking by any means either. So $18 million ice fishing drug bust. This is a crazy story. It's an estimated over 100 million people watch the Super Bowl in a given year. One of the most viewed lifetime experiences. Many people glued to the TV. Seemed like that was the perfect time to get away with something nefarious or not so good. At least that was the logic of the Colombian drug dealers used on a Super Bowl Sunday in 1980.
Oh, we're going back.
We're going back. It was the evening at sunset when a group of South Dakota ice fishermen saw a 4-propeller plane drop into a wheat field near the bank of the Missouri River. Worried they just witnessed a crash, 5 anglers set off with a pickup to check out the scene. Touchdown was far from an accident, though. A DC-7 parked in the middle of an impromptu airstrip marked by lights hooked up to car batteries. The Good Samaritans were already suspicious, but the plane's crew conflicting stories threw up more red flags. One person said something about engine issues being lost. Another one said something, you know, low on fuel. Nothing was adding up, and the pilot kind of had the attitude where, like, he wished we would just leave. One of the anglers that they interviewed said shortly after the encounter, the crew fled the scene and disappeared into the hills. Concerned they might return, the anglers pulled a pickup truck in front of the landing gear, deflated the plane's tires to prevent them from taking off. While waiting for law enforcement to arrive, the fishermen started doing some investigating of their own. Inside the gutted jet, they found floor-to-ceiling stacks of marijuana bales that filled every cavity of the cockpit. The estimated street value of the mountain of drugs was $18 million, or today's number, $57 million today, making it the biggest drug bust in South Dakota history. Although the plan unraveled quickly, the drug pushers had been plotting the drop for over a year. That's how it was supposed to go. The crew of three would have leave Columbia, make the nonstop flight to South Dakota, carefully navigating any major metropolitan areas, land in the dark, discreet location. Ragtag group composed of furniture factory owners and whoever would promise $30,000 each for their help. After landing in the fuel tanker would refuel the plane, and the fleet of semis full of hay bales would load the marijuana. The plane would fly 3,000 miles back to Columbia, and the semis would drive to Minneapolis, the some 400 miles.
Well, it looks like they had a nice plan to start with.
Problem was, they had a strong southerly tailwind to cause the plane to land 2 hours ahead of schedule. Costly mistake meant that the low-flying plane South Dakota were seen, and unfortunately, they were caught. And needless to say, there is your largest drug bust in South Dakota.
That would be dangerous business today, even going near the plane.
Yeah, not coming anywhere near that thing at all. Well, speaking of not coming anywhere near, we're not coming anywhere near this last year, huh? This is it for 2025. Yeah, well, good year for everybody. Pretty good. Ava?
Yeah, Don? No complaints.
It's been a good year for me. Appreciate you guys being with us. And, of course, you listeners out there, we appreciate you guys more so than anything else. Having you guys stalk in the field, I was out skiing the other day, and a guy comes up to me and goes, "Love the Valley Outdoors." I went, "What?" He goes, "I heard your voice. I knew who it was." So pretty kind of really, really cool. Thank you guys for listening. Appreciate it. Thank you for all of us. I hope you have a happy new year and make it be safe and prosperous. For that, that's us. We're the Valley Outdoors, and we are out.
Thanks for listening to the Valley Outdoors Radio, brought to you by Vexus Boats, building dreams with an unequaled passion for excellence. Catch us next week, same time, same place. Have a great day on the water or in the field.